to Microbyte. My name is Gavin Clark. I'm a software editor at The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley of All About Microsoft on ZDNet.
We've been in the Big Easy with Microsoft, where one person who's not been taking it easy for the last few days is the chief executive, Steve Ballmer, a former US Marine who's been practicing some tough love with Microsoft partners, telling them essentially he loves them. He super loves them, but quit their girly fretting. This industry changes. Microsoft can and will compete with them. Now go find yourself some new opportunities. It's been a show where Steve-O's been and his executives have been trying to evangelize partners into newness, new things, supporting new products, forgetting the old. So it's all been all about Windows 7, Office web apps, and Azure, or as they like to call it here, Azure, and online services. So what did Steve-O and his crew serve up? They announced pay-as-you-go pricing for the cloud, Azure, and ironically, things are still looking pretty good for Linux. I think Linux can take a lot of heart from what you heard there. Microsoft also unveiled the same old Office with Office 2010, but the most interesting part, the online version, you still can't get your hands on, and you won't get your hands on until August. What can you expect and when? We're going to get into some of that. Windows 7, it's done, it's dusted, and it's going cheap. Microsoft used the conference to announce its latest tranche of super discounts. I mean, why? Linux doesn't even have a significant presence on the desktop, and the Mac has a tiny market share. We're going to look at where the real threat to Windows 7 is coming from, and you might be surprised. So, MJ, Azure pricing. How do you pronounce Azure?
Yeah, that's the $10 million question. How do you pronounce it? Yeah. I always say Azure. Rhymes with badger.
Right.
Yeah. That's my goal. That's what I always think of when I'm trying to remember how to pronounce it.
It's a tricky one because I meet Microsoft and I say Azure, and then they start saying, yeah, Azure. And there's like a real, like, you know, failure of minds to meet there.
Well, I think the pronunciation is the least of their problems with Azure.
Yeah.
I mean, here this week at the partner show, we knew that Microsoft was going to talk about its pricing strategy and how partners would fit into the Azure equation. That we already knew that was coming. And so you knew, you know, with things like service level agreements and cost per compute hour and storage hour and all that, it was going to be complex. But it was way more complex than I thought it was going to be when we saw the actual announcement.
Yeah.
You know, Microsoft laid out different levels of pricing. They talked about how it's going to be mostly based on compute time, but there were all these other caveats when it wouldn't be based on compute time. But I think you had a really good analysis, Gavin. You looked at what Microsoft announced versus what Amazon's pricing is. And your takeaway, I believe, was they're roughly the same, although Microsoft just kind of nicked off a little bit of the price just so they could say they came in slightly below Amazon.
Precisely. The thing that became really obvious really quickly was just how hard it is to do a straight comparison on how much if you will pay if you want to deploy on Azure or if you want to deploy on Amazon. And I pick on Amazon because it's the one thing that Microsoft feels it has to compete with out right now in terms of cloud. So the clearest comparison was on pure compute. So it was, I think, 12 cents per hour for a Windows instance on Windows Azure versus Amazon, which is 0.125 cents. Well, and if you compare that to Amazon's Linux offering, it's 10 cents per compute hour. And then on storage, Azure is going to charge you 15 per gigabyte versus 10 cents on Amazon. And then things get really complicated because both Amazon and Microsoft start layering in all these other things. But I thought that the interesting thing about the Microsoft service is whereas Amazon is going to charge you for some real frills, such as reserved instances, elastic IP addresses, and load balancing, Microsoft's really going to kind of like nickel and dime you, as they say here in the US, on some stuff that I thought you might really want to take for granted. Like they're gonna, it seems like they're gonna charge you for .NET services, which is like identity, having your people log into a web service, or secure bus for transactions. So some of the more infrastructure level things they're gonna charge you for, which I thought, you know, it's like your credit card. You know, it seems great up front when you're buying these products, you know, but over time the charges build up and build up. And everyone's talking about the cloud in terms of, hey, you don't have to go to the expense buying a server anymore, so you save that money. But, you know, over time, you're going to pay a lot more money than that server was in the first place. That was kind of my takeaway. And second takeaway, yeah, Linux, anyone who offers a Linux-based service doesn't have anything to worry about in terms of price, because Linux is cheaper than Windows, and that was the same old story from a few years back when everyone was getting into web hosting, and Linux-based services running on things like Red Hat were cheaper than hosted services running on Windows.
Yeah, I think one thing though to keep in mind about the pricing for Microsoft is, if you want, you don't have to get that level of the .NET services, because they've decoupled it. So if you only want Azure, the base operating system, and those pieces that are part of that, you just buy that.
Yeah.
And say you don't want the service bus, or you don't want the identity, you can leave those, not buy those, not pay for those, and say just pick up the database if you want. Mm-hmm. So they've got a good mix and match thing going on. But I think it was Roger Jennings who writes the Oakleaf Systems blog, which is a really good blog for people who are interested in the real nitty-gritty nuts and bolts of cloud computing. He noted, like you are saying, that there's still you still can't really compete with free, you know.
Yeah.
And no matter how good your terms look and how good your SLA looks and all that, he noted on his site that he didn't feel Azure pricing was competitive with Google App Engine, because – Google offers a free threshold for developers, and there's not an equivalent like that in the Azure pricing, at least not that we've heard about so far.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a consideration for people who really are budget constrained, which many people are in this economy right now. You know, we knew from the very beginning when Microsoft first rolled out its Azure strategy last fall at the PDC that they were going to have this kind of piecemeal approach, and that their intention was to kind of come at the cloud a little differently than Amazon and Google. Like, they wanted to recreate Windows in the cloud. That's basically their mission. And so they're offering you a lot of the stuff. And I think your job as a developer is going to be like, which stuff do I really need and want, and how much am I willing to pay for?
Here's a question. Is this chaos or is this organized chaos we're looking at here?
Yeah, good question. I mean, the other part when you're talking about chaos is the whole SLA conversation. You know, how much do you pay for a guaranteed uptime? And when Microsoft talked about that yesterday, I can't even distill that into like an hour-long podcast, all the terms and conditions on that. But the bottom line is they're saying their idea, at least, is we don't want to make an SLA something that only the richest developers can afford to buy. We want to make it something everybody can afford. We're going to offer everybody 99.9% guaranteed uptime with like slight variations for different parts and all that. But, you know, there's all these, again, all these caveats and terms and conditions. And sometimes you got to wonder, are more choices good? Or at some point, are so many choices completely overwhelming and you don't know what you really have there?
At some point, yeah, flexibility and choice is good. But at some point, you also confuse people. And looking at this, I think people are going to be confused. But, you know, I think having said that, there was a decent round of applause for when they announced Azure at the show, which suggests this is something partners want, or at least have been waiting for, because, hey, you know, they're Microsoft people. They're conversant in SQL Server and .NET, and maybe they want to use Google App Engine. They don't want to use Ajax. They don't want to use, like, you know, MapReduce, all these kind of big things that are hot in Silicon Valley.
Another point we haven't really touched on yet is another piece of Microsoft's Azure strategy that they touched on very lightly here at the partner show was how are they going to do private cloud? And that was just kind of a passing mention here, although there were a couple of drill down sessions where they got into that a bit more. But they're starting to talk about that more, and how they're not going to actually give you Azure to run on-premise if you are a customer. But instead, what they're going to do is take some of the Azure technologies and make them parts of future versions of Windows Server and SQL. SQL Server, Windows Server, System Center, and they're going to add some of those capabilities into existing products. So that's going to be your alternative if you're a customer who doesn't trust the cloud and you want to have cloud computing capabilities inside your shop. So there's no Azure on enterprise sites. That idea is dead officially now. And you're going to be able to use different tools. One of these is called the Dynamic Data Center Toolkit for enterprises. And Microsoft's going to give you little bits and pieces, and you're supposed to assemble all this and make your own cloud. It's like, make your own cloud.
I know.
Do it yourself.
Yeah, I noticed also they were discounting. There was a lot of use of the word discount at this show. Partners will get a 5-cent discount on the subscription pricing if they sign up to Azure. There was a question mark over this at the conference in New Orleans. It's available now for free. I mean, it was already kind of available, but now it's even more available. And then the pricing, the subscription pricing, and the other price they announced is going to kick in November at the next PDC. So it seems like, you know, this is happening in Windows 2. They're dropping prices substantially to the point free, especially here, to get people on it and build a market that partners and other people can exploit potentially.
Yes. The discounting is, as we'll talk about later on our podcast too, around Windows. It's very confusing, but they are offering discounts. They're really trying to seed the channel. You know, you probably remember, Gavin, like just 2 years ago, even maybe last year, if you talked to partners about Azure, they saw it, many of them saw it as a competitor.
Yeah, definitely.
Like they saw Microsoft coming in to eat their lunch because Microsoft was getting into the hosting business, and they were afraid of it. And it's been really interesting at this show to see kind of the tide turning. And I think Microsoft has finally convinced them, okay, we're going to leave you some room to still play. And that's what that 5% discount is around Azure. That's part of the bargain there.
One of the sessions I went to, the keynote on that went into more on Azure. Am I saying it right now? I feel my pronunciation has changed in the course of the show. It was a packed out session. It was kind of a standing room session, so there was interest. It was hard to tell though whether these were existing partners who are signed up, whether and some of those guys are working on the server and the desktop, or if they're already offering hosted software, you know, hosted versions of Microsoft products, or whether this is a completely new generation of partner, let's call it a Web 2.0 generation of partner that's coming to the Microsoft camp. So it's kind of hard to say where that interest is coming from, I think. It'd be interesting to find out where it's coming from too.
Yeah, it definitely would be. Even when Ballmer asked how many of you have ever been to a partner show, I was surprised there weren't more hands up. So it might be a new generation of partners who are coming in.
Okay. Something else that's in the cloud or getting in the cloud, Office 2010 with its web apps, wasn't it, MJ? Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Microsoft announced at the partner show is launching what it's calling the tech preview of Office 2010. So this isn't a real beta. This is not open to the public. It's invitation only. And the attendees of the partner conference all got invites automatically just because they came to the show to be part of this tech preview. So what's in the tech preview? You get a version of Office 2010 client. You get Visio 2010. You get Project 2010. If you're invited to a separate beta, you get SharePoint 2010. But what you don't get is what everybody was really waiting for, which is Office web apps, which are the web-centric versions of Word, PowerPoint, OneNote, and Excel. So those are what everybody thought Microsoft was going to drop here, and I think even Google thought that, and that's part of the reason they pre-announced the Chrome OS. Those bits are not ready, and so they're not going to get them until August, the Office web apps. You know, I've been hearing from people who have dabbled with some of the leaked bits because there was a leaked version of Office 2010 that came out just before the partner show opened. And it's the same version that they're making available to the invitation-only preview people. And people like the feature, some of the features that are in there. You know, it's hard to say, like, how excited can you get about another new version of Office? You know, woohoo, ribbon. but there are some features people have called out that they like. There's this paste preview feature in the new Office 2010 that lets you preview paste before you actually, you know, when you cut and paste something from a document, and you can look at what it's going to look like before you commit to doing the paste. There's a feature called Backstage that lets you look at your files in a new way. It's like a pane along the side of Office, that a new like reader pane that's going to let you view your files and be able to more clearly see exactly what is going on in a long document and things like that. So there's little, you know, advances that people like, you know, but it's not some like killer new huge release that everyone's going to go, wow, I've got to have Office 2010. I think that's what people were waiting for the web apps for. You know, they wanted to see, like, okay, that's the one really, really new thing that's in 2010, and how different is that going to be? Well, we're going to have to wait till August to see that.
The interesting thing I thought was, it was not around the features, because it's pretty much, you know, Office as usual, especially one of our reviewers, Tim Anderson, noted that it's the extension of the ribbon interface, et cetera, and the usual even deeper integration with SharePoint, which may or may not be to your taste. But what I thought was interesting was the attempt to get people to use the new web apps. And it seems that you'll get a free version. There's your competition with Google Apps. And then you'll have an on-premises edition, which people, customers signed up to its software assurance program will be entitled to. So that seemed like a deliberate attempt to get people to purchase software assurance, which I know has been a bit of a prickly subject for customers and for Microsoft, because software assurance, you pay up front on the guarantee you're going to get upgrades to new product, or at least entitlement to new product when it comes out. But you know what Microsoft's like in terms of product slippages, the products don't always come out. And then the other version of the web apps they'll be available as an online service through Microsoft Online Services. So that's kind of an outsourced off-site kind of thing. So those latter two will be charged. But for me, it was the trying to get people on software assurance to do it, because as we all know, Office is Microsoft is its own biggest competitor when it comes to Office, because people stick with the old version. I mean, Office 1997 is the version of Office that refuses to die.
It's true, Gavin. I'm still running myself an older version, which will remain numberless. I will not tell you how old the Office is that I'm running, but I am not an early adopter or even a current adopter. But yeah, I totally agree with you on software assurance, and you know, Microsoft's going to make certain features only available in certain versions. They announced here at the show the five different Office 2010 SKUs that they're going to have, which is down from the eight that they already have. But one of the most interesting of those SKUs to me is what's called Office Professional Plus 2010. And what's interesting about that one is they're starting to include Groove, the online offline synchronization client that they bought when they got Ray Ozzie and Groove Networks in 2005. That's going to be part of that SKU, and it's going to be renamed SharePoint Workspace. But that's the only SKU you get it in. So you have to be under a volume license agreement to get it. And so you can see where this is going. They're pushing you more and more to get software assurance and volume license contracts if you really want to get the meat of some of the new and cooler features that they're building into Office.
Did you say that certain features in web apps will be available to certain types of customers? Because I put that question to them, and they denied it to me, so I wasn't sure if you'd heard something different.
No, I think on web apps, at least the way I asked that exact same question as well, and I was told a little bit confusingly that the user experience will be the same in all three versions of web apps, but the container will be different. And I said, what's the container? And they said, the container is SharePoint. So if you think through what this means, it means, okay, Office web apps will look the same if you're running a free version or a paid version, whether it's a Microsoft hosted or however partner hosted. But if you're getting one of those two paid versions, you have to go through SharePoint. Like, SharePoint's the unseen middleman in both of those cases. So, you know, that's good and bad. It means you have a dependency on SharePoint. Bad if you don't want to be a SharePoint shop. It's good if you want to get the features that SharePoint enables, like advanced rights management and content management and a lot of these other things that some businesses do want. So they're going to kind of tie your hands a little bit there.
Right. Microsoft tying your hands, unheard of. So Windows 7, let's move on to that puppy. Discounts. It's all about discounts, wasn't it? I noticed there seems to be an attempt here to get Windows 7, as you would expect, push it onto both businesses and consumers. On the business side, at the partner conference, they announced 15-35% discount for customers on volume contracts who signed up from September the 1st. And bear in mind, Windows 7 comes out on, I think, October the 22nd. So clearly, the pressure, the emphasis is there is that, hey, volume customers, come on over, what was great. And then secondly, consumers, well, I think we might have discussed this previously, but they're also discounting pretty heavily there. There's money off of Home Premium, both the upgrade and the full version. That's 8% and 7% respectively compared to the premium versions of Vista. So it's discounts and early sign-ups are very much the name of this particular game. Again, I think they're trying to build that market share hard and soon. I thought it was interesting on Software Assurance and Enterprise Agreement, I think we discussed this earlier, MJ. What does this mean? If you're an SA and you already paid for your Software Assurance on the belief you were going to get Windows 7, you've paid up front, and now this new group of customers are going to be offered a discount that it doesn't seem you're going to be entitled to, which is up to 35% off. This is not going to keep existing customers happy, I'd have thought, and yet it's an attempt to push Software Assurance.
Well, Gavin, this, I got to say, Microsoft's been trying to keep their messaging clear on Windows 7, but all of these discounts, I feel like they're really failing their customers to explain these correctly. Because what's really happening, I believe, and I've gone around talking to Microsoft at least six rounds this week on this very question about, you know, what if you're already a Software Assurance customer? What if you're a new one? And what I think is the truth, the last thing I'm thinking at this, is if you already are a Software Assurance customer, there was a discount and still is a discount in place if you want Windows 7. Mm-hmm. Microsoft doesn't tout it very much, but if you go up to the MicrosoftIncentives.com page, you can see it. There's a discount laid out there for people who have Software Assurance. Mm-hmm. So what they announced this week at the partner show is if you're somebody who doesn't have Software Assurance already, we'll give you this extra discount if you want Windows 7. So there's actually two different discounts, which they never really clarified in my mind. Mm. My question, though, is, okay, we know Windows 7 is going to RTM this month, July. Microsoft has repeatedly said that. But if you're a new Software Assurance customer, you can't get the bits till September 1st. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's this missing month. Like, why can't I have the bits right after it RTMs? Like, what's the holdup here? Mm. You guys want me to take the Software Assurance discount? I want the bits. Let me get them. You know, I've talked about this with some of my sources and my readers, and they say, well, who really wants Windows 7 bits right off the bat? I mean, sure, like the enthusiast community does, like fanboys, power users, all those people, but how many businesses want it like right this second? Mm-hmm. So does it really matter you can't get it till September 1st? I don't know. You know, but, you know, on the face of it, I think it doesn't look so great. You know, Microsoft's been kind of hiding, like, who can get the bits when? Finally, we found out if you're an MSDN or a TechNet subscriber, you are going to be able to get the bits, quote, within a few weeks after RTM. Microsoft wouldn't even say that until this week. So I think they're doing a disservice to the customer base right now, because I think they've been pretty clear all along, you know, here's what we're saying about Windows 7. And now suddenly we're going into like this cloudy, convoluted space when people want to know, when can I get the software?
I hate to draw on the Linux example, but I will. You know, at least the Linux distros, when they're up there, that are out there, and the bits can start downloading. There seems to be something in Microsoft's DNA, or just the way what these products are released, that there's always going to be this lag because of the amount of bureaucracy and inertia in getting these things out there. Maybe the gap between marketing and business and the technical development, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to know, especially on the consumer side of life, the concerted push that seems to be going on around a Home Premium version of Windows 7, and not the more expensive Windows 7 Professional, Windows 7 Ultimate. I know Microsoft likes, which both more expensive, as I said. Microsoft loves these more expensive SKUs of Windows because it means more money for them. So there's definitely a change in strategy here. It seems to me that it wants to push Home Premium as to as many people as possible, simply to get them to upgrade off of Windows XP. And that's interesting because, let's say, with previous Windows Vista especially, it was Ultimate. It wanted to get on Ultimate. But I think, as you know, MJ, the Vista Ultimate experiment burned a lot of people very badly, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And now I think we're kind of seeing it's almost like Vista is being totally swept under the rug, which you can understand if you're Microsoft. You just don't want to even talk about that anymore. I thought it was interesting here at the partner show, there is no session that uses Vista as a keyword when you do a search for it. There's no Vista sessions, none. And okay, they're trying to build the excitement and hype and partner buy-in for Windows 7, but still, a lot of them sold customers Vista. Now what happens to all those guys? You know, oh, sorry, we sold you Vista, and now we're only going to talk about Windows 7, you know. I think Vista Ultimate was like the key example that people keep coming back to, like how badly could Microsoft mess up Vista, you know. They promised all these Ultimate extras. Most of them never materialized. They kind of tried to sweep that under the rug, and now we're seeing kind of it come around full circle with Windows 7, because with Windows 7, there's no discounts if you want to buy the Ultimate version. No. And Microsoft's definitely de-emphasizing the Ultimate SKU of 7, even though it's the most expensive. Mm-hmm. They're just really pushing that aside. And I bet by the time Windows 8 comes out, there'll be no more Ultimate. It'll be, that SKU will just disappear and go its merry way. And even though Microsoft could, you know, in theory, use that as their Ultimate upsell, they're not going to do that. Instead, they're going to focus on the Home Premium and the I'm drawing a blank on the other name. Oh. Too many Microsoft product names this week. The other business version of Windows 7. Those are the two SKUs they're going to lead with. So
Professional, was that what you were
talking about? I'm confusing my Office SKUs and my Vista SKUs and my
Windows
7 SKUs.
Home Premium, Home Professional, and Home. Actually, we have Home Premium, Professional, and Ultimate.
Yeah, Professional. Sorry. Okay.
Nothing like sounding professional on podcasts.
It's so many SKUs, you know? Like, yeah, here we go again with the same old criticism. Why can't they just have one SKU?
Why can't they, dare I say it, be more like Apple, one operating system? You see, this is where segmentation gets you. So one minor announcement that I thought was interesting, it's a dead in, lot of interest to the channel partners, but I'm going to say it anyway. They're going to double the amount of copies of Windows that partners can get. And I thought that was interesting because it essentially means that it wants partners. Publicly, they're saying at least we want partners building more applications using Windows 7, which is a fair point. But you bear in mind, those partners are the cadres of Windows, like the shock troops. And I've got a feeling a lot of them are still building applications and using Windows XP. So it wants to get those guys off of previous versions of Windows and onto Windows 7 as fast as possible. Therefore, it's simply dishing out more copies of Windows 7.
Yep, they're definitely trying to get the partners on board with 7. And I think you're totally right, Gavin, that their biggest competitor by far for Windows 7 is not Mac OS X, it's not Linux, it's XP. Mm-hmm. They got to get people off XP.
So time for the patented Balmer Mood Index, I feel. Now, I've got a little treat for Microbyte regulars. Steve-O is with us, and I thought before we go get into what kind of mood is Steve in this week, it might be interesting to hear a few snippets of what he had to say, because he took the stage on Wednesday morning, and he was pretty much Steve. He was bullish, he was energized, he was, dare I say, entertaining.
Balmer generates a lot of excitement among his partner group.
Yeah.
As you'd expect, being he loves partners and he really puts on a show for him every partner show. And this year was no exception.
Here's Balmer trying to convince partners that Microsoft is committed to the new investments it's making.
We're going to invest in continuing to attract new customers despite the economic downturn. And we're going to keep what I would call the same old Microsoft approach, long-term, tenacious, and Accenture. Long term. Look, you come here, and partly I know what you have to do. You have to sit there and say, on anything they're doing well, are they going to keep it up? On anything where they're not doing well today, are they just going to keep at it till they get it right? Are they going to go home? We don't go home. We just keep coming and coming and coming. Tenacious. Virtualization. You're seeing some tenacity out there today. Unified communications, voice, video, boom. You'll see tenacity out of us. Security, boom, which is keep coming. Management, keep coming. And I think our track record of having our tenacity turn into success is quite high.
There you go. He's going to keep coming and keep coming and boom.
I don't think he had enough hurricanes before his presentation.
I just think he, personally, I think he lays off the coffee before he takes the stage. So that leads us nicely onto Microsoft's arguably its biggest bet, which is Bing. And he used Bing, the search engine, as an example of Microsoft being committed and why partners should be using Bing, if not in their products. At least they should be searching the internet with Bing.
If ever there was evidence for that, it's the Bing itself. Man, oh man, if we take a lot of abuse. And we're still just an itsy-bitsy little piece of the market. But man, we got a little mojo. We got a little innovation. We'll keep going. And you might say, Steve, what does this have to do with us? This isn't the Bing search. It's not the center of most of our partners' world. Well, it has two things to do with it. Number one, it's as good a demonstration of our tenacity and commitment as anything you've ever seen, including Windows 1.0. I put it on the list. And number two, it's my chance to tell you you should set your default search provider to Bing.com.
There you go. Did he say mojo? I'm sure he said a little mojo in there.
He did.
I never thought I'd heard the word mojo cross Barmer's lips, and there it did. So what do you reckon? Taking all that into context, what he spanned everything there, intense business, even when a little monkey boy. How'd you categorize that?
I'd give him right between the monkey boy and chair throwing, actually. Yeah, because I don't know if you know this, Gavin, but the guy who Balmer allegedly threw a chair over, Mark Lukowski, who used to work at Microsoft and was one of the key developers of NT, he went to Google. Microsoft was not too happy. Balmer supposedly threw a chair. He denies he did. But Lukowski this week quit Google to go to VMware. So maybe Balmer's throwing another chair or reversing the chair throw. I don't know.
Maybe he's in like art therapy this week or something. I don't know. I think he was monkey boy. There's a gap between all business and monkey boy. But I'm gonna say all business with a strong twist of monkey boy in there as well. This is New Orleans after all, and they like their drinks with a twist.
I think next week will be all monkey boy though, because next week's Microsoft's big sales conference. So that's where he typically does his running around the stage, screaming, and et cetera. So he's probably just saving the vocal cords this week for that.
So, MJ, that wraps it up from the Big Easy. I remain Gavin Clark, software editor to the Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft blogger at ZDNet. And this was Microbyte, brought to you by the people who bite the hand that feeds IT.